Nah, I wasn't raised at gunpoint, and I've read too many books to distract me from the mirror when unhappy with my looks. And I ain't got proper diction for the makings of a thug, though I grew up in the ghetto, and my niggas also drugs. And though that may validate me for a spot on MTV, or get me all the airplay that my bank account would need, I was hoping to invest in a lesson that I learned. And I thought this fool would jump me just because it was my turn. I went to an open space cause I knew he wouldn't do it. If somebody there could see him, or somebody else might prove it. And maybe in your eyes, it may seem I got punked out, cause I walked a narrow path, and then went and changed my route. But that openness exposed me to a truth I couldn't find, in the clenched fists of my ego, or the confines of my mind, in the hipness of my swagger, or the swagger in my step, or the scowl of my grimace, or the meanness of my rep. Cause you represent a truth, son, that changes by the hour, and when you open to it, vulnerability is power. And in that shifting form, you'll find a truth that doesn't change. That truth's living proof of the fact that God is strange. Talk to strangers when family fails and friends lead you astray. When Buddha laughs and Jesus weeps and turns out God is gay. His angels and messiahs love can come in many forms. In the hallways of your projects or the fat girl in your dorm. And when you finally take the time to see what they're about. And perhaps you find them lonely or their wisdom trips you out. Maybe you'll find the cycles end, you're back where you began. But come this time around, you'll have someone to hold your hand. Who prays for you, who's there for you, who sends you love and light. Exposes you to parts of you that you once tried to fight. And come this time around, you choose to walk a different path. You'll embrace what you turned away and cry at what you laughed. Cause that's the only way we're gonna make it through this storm. Where ignorance is common sense and senselessness the norm. And flags wave high above the truth and that you never touch. And stolen goods are overpriced and freedom costs too much. And no one seems to recognize the symbols come to life. The bitten apple on the screen and Jesus had a wife. And she was his messiah like that stranger maybe yours. Who holds a subtle knife that carves through worlds like magic doors. And that's what I've been looking for, the bridge from then to now. Was watching BET like, what the fuck, son, this is foul. But that square box don't represent the sphere that we live in. The earth is not a flat screen, I ain't trying to fit in. But this ain't for the underground, this here's for the sun. A seed a stranger gave to me and planted on my tongue. And when I look at you, I know I'm not the only one. As a great man once said, there's nothing more powerful than an idea whose time has come.
That was Saul Williams, Talk to Strangers. And this is Gnostic Media Research and Publishing's podcast, episode number 115. I'm your host, Jan Irvin. This episode is an interview with Larkin Rose titled Dialectic and the Demise of Government, and is being released on Thursday, June 2nd, 2011. My interview with Larkin was recorded on May 30th, 2011. Larkin Rose is a self-described enemy of the state and tax heretic. The author of several books, including The Iron Web, and two of his books were written during his one-year stay as a political prisoner in the U.S. prison system. Mr. Rose is an outspoken advocate of self-ownership and a voluntary society. For more information, see larkinrose.com. And donations. This episode is dedicated to Sam, Paul, Jason, Max, and Simon. And this show is run on donations and our website sales. This is not corporate media, but independent media in the truest sense of the words. And by donating or ordering one of the books or DVDs or the audio archives or getting a membership to the website to download the older podcasts, you help to continue this programming. And of course, as we ask each month, stop sending your money to your local cable company each month, paying them to lie to you month in and month out. And somebody wrote me this week saying that they had internet through their cable company. So just keep the internet and kill the television. Upcoming shows. Next week, we're going to have Mark Passio back for part 3 on mind control. And then we also have Professor Paul Churchland from UC San Diego lined up to discuss his book, The Engine of Reason and the Seed of the Soul, and also Dodd Sutton from Wooden Books to discuss Islamic design, and Derek Murphy to discuss his new book, Jesus Potter, Harry Christ, and we'll have him on just in time for the release of the new Harry Potter film, and that is a hilarious book, by the way, as well as Miguel Connor to discuss his new book on Gnosticism, and Peter Gorman to discuss his book on ayahuasca, and there's probably a number of others lined up. for the near future. And again, support this program by going to the Gnostic Media website and ordering one of the books or DVDs or the She Who Remembers audio archives, a t-shirt, a download membership, etc. We greatly appreciate and need your support. And we had to pay out over $6,000 in the last couple of weeks for auto repairs and things like that. And we greatly need to make up the expenses we had to pay out. And lastly, the views expressed by the authors and guests of this unprogram are their own and are not necessarily those held by myself, the host, or Gnostic Media. The website, www.gnosticmedia.com, that's GNOSTICmedia.com. You can reach me directly through the contact form on the website or at contact@gnosticmedia.com. Thanks for listening and thank you for your support. And here is my interview with Larkin Rose, as well as his lecture from the Philadelphia Free Your Mind Conference that was put on by Mark Passio. Enjoy.
What the goal is of what they do is not communication or understanding anything. It's manipulation and control.
Indeed.
And that's what you get when you mangle communication into a means of control instead of a means of conveying thought.
Larkin, start off by telling us a little bit about yourself and sort of, you know, where you grew up, that kind of, I'm sure the audience would probably find somewhat interesting your background, if you wouldn't mind going into that and your childhood sort of stuff there, because you do have an interesting background.
Yeah, I grew up in a little town in eastern Pennsylvania. It's basically a piece of Christianity most people haven't heard of is sort of what ties that community together. It's based on the writings of Emanuel Swedenborg, who wrote a gazillion books. He was a brilliant scientist in his own right. And then he released a bunch of books saying he had been allowed to see into the other world and see what goes on there. And so there are these books by him and basically a subset of Christianity grew out of that. And Bernathen, Pennsylvania is sort of the heart of that. Now it's all over the place. But on the one hand, so I grew up in a town that was, you know, Christian, conservative and all that. But a very unusual thing about the culture because of that religion is that religion is very much not about faith alone. Now, I don't belong to that church now, but the fact that even in the religion, the Swedenborg talked about the fact that if you don't make truth your own by understanding it, blindly believing somebody because somebody told you to is pointless. It'll lead you in the wrong direction. It's not the way to be what a human being's supposed to be. And so basically growing up in a place where we were taught, and most of us believe some pretty unusual things, and B, we were taught to doubt things, that sort of lays a nice foundation for being able to get away from all the garbage that everybody is trained into, you know, to sort of have it be accepted that you're allowed to doubt what almost everybody believes is sort of a good head start to being able to think about things. And so you have, and that's true, even if people leave the religion or stay in it or whatever they do, just having an upbringing where you're allowed to think unusual things and you're allowed to doubt. And I don't know of many religions that actually say you're supposed to doubt, because if you don't doubt and think about things, then you never understand them. The truth is never your own. It's just something you took for granted for somebody else. And so that's, you know, that was the context in which we grew up in, basically conservative town. And
you know, it almost sounds like this guy Swedenborgian was either studying various levels of, you know, higher mathematics through the quadrivium into the Kabbalah, and possibly also combining that with the entheogens, you know, the entheogenic or the psychedelic experience, because what you're saying right there is just so, it sounds so typical of so many of the religions that spurred out of that time. And, you know, in fact, just a little while ago, I was listening to the new Broadway play audio track from the Book of Mormon that's absolutely hilarious. And of course, Joseph Smith has this whole experience where he was supposedly talking to God and he gets these special plates. And, you know, this guy was a scientist and he figured out how to talk to God or whatever. And they're all from, you know, New York or Pennsylvania, right around the same area on the East Coast, that have basically started these modern day cults.
Right. And it's, of course, they would complain about being called a cult. And the funny thing is, what became of that religion doesn't actually match what Swedenborg himself described. And it may annoy people who are still in the church to hear me say it. But basically what they did was take some, and I don't know if Swedenborg had these experiences or not. I wasn't there. So they're amazingly coherent and amazingly comprehensive in his explanation of how things work with the soul and the afterlife and all that. Whether he made it up, he's either the most brilliant guy in the world and made up this whole huge thing, or he actually experienced something. But whatever he did, if somebody comes along to you today and says, oh, by the way, I got to see into the other world, I think it's a safe bet that almost everybody in the town I grew up in would say, no, you didn't, shut up, you're a loony.
Well, it would just be like, read Aldous Huxley's Doors of Perception or something like that. And it's such an extremely detailed explanation of that type of experience from, he was obviously experiencing mescaline for one of the first times from a white person's perspective. Mm-hmm. But the detail and the insight that he gives, if you look at who was it? William James, who wrote the different aspects of the religious experience. This is what has been used by modern day science, like at Johns Hopkins University, to begin to do studies on just what is the religious experience, and comparing the typical class A, spontaneous religious experience with so-called drug induced religious experiences. And they can't, by the literature and by the descriptions that people provide, the scientists don't see any difference between the two.
Right. Can't tell any difference. Yeah.
Right. Which is why I mentioned that, what you were explaining that this guy said he experienced, it just seems atypical to my background, having studied entheogens for 20 years. It just screams that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's, but what I was saying is that what he actually says, first of all, he describes his experience, but his point wasn't just, hey, I had this weird experience, here it is. He speaks as if he was a messenger. He was supposed to tell the human race this stuff about,
right,
how to be a human being. And, but it's, because unfortunately we haven't been all that good at it for the first however many thousand years.
Yeah.
But what I was saying, these books are about, he says things like, all religion is of life, and a life of religion is to do good. In other words, don't sit around the church all day. Go, be a person. Go have a life and do stuff. And the sad thing is, basically, you take these fairly unusual ideas, and they sort of turned into an established, organized church and religion. It's not very big, but it's organized, and it sort of turns into a slightly different carbon copy of every other church in the world, where there's a hierarchy, and it turns into a political thing, and it basically messes up anything worthwhile from what Swedenborg actually said and what he described. So that, the first step, it's the same thing with Christians. If somebody today said, guess what, I'm the Son of God, I've come down to save you, they would crucify him all over again. And if you went to most people in the new church, is sort of the shorthand title of the church that's based on Swedenborg's writings, if you went to them and said, guess what, I was allowed to see into the other world too, they'd say, no, you weren't, you're crazy, go away. So it's weird what people will accept because they were brought up in it. But if you give them the exact same thing that they weren't brought up in, suddenly it doesn't at all sound like something they want or believe in or would be at all comfortable with. And it just sort of shows how most people don't think about things to get to where they are. They didn't figure out reality to come to their belief system. They just inherited it from somebody else who just smacked it into their heads while they were growing up. And they don't really understand. They don't know it's true, and they don't understand it, and they can't even explain why they think it when you get down to the details. And it's certainly not.
Isn't that typical for most people with their beliefs or whatever it may be?
Yeah, and not even just beliefs about religion, but certainly beliefs about politics, which is my main focus and has been for years now, that what people believe about government and law and authority is a completely irrational mythology.
Right. Well, and, you know, we'll go into much depth in that here shortly, but before we go that way, why don't we go into a little bit about your background? What's your educational background?
I just have a 2-year associates in arts college degree from the little college that was in that same town. And then after that, my wife had a medical transcription business, and eventually I joined her doing that. And so we did that for ages. Mostly what I've learned was outside of school when I actually got interested in something. You know, when people say, what's your education, they usually mean, what classroom did you sit in for?
Are you an autodidact, or did you, you know, pay the pain for sitting through a bunch of hours to learn nothing and have to go and study it yourself anyway?
There were some things in school that happened to coincide with what I was actually interested in, so I got a little bit out of it for that. But even most of what I got learned while in school was from ignoring the teacher and reading other things and working on other projects while the teacher wasn't looking. But there was a little bit of overlap where there was something I wanted to learn and the teacher happened to be talking about it. But unfortunately, that wasn't very often.
Now, let's go just do a brief history, and I don't want to go into too much depth on it, but you put out a DVD in 2004 called Theft by Deception.
Yep.
And what led up to that DVD, and what were the events surrounding that?
That had to do with the federal income tax and what the laws actually say and what they've said since before I was born, before my parents were born. And this came after I got into the political philosophy of starting to question government and all that. But just sort of coincidentally, someone pointed me at this, you know, quote-unquote conspiracy theory that the federal income tax is not what everyone's been told. Now, there are about 8 zillion theories that fit that general description, that it's not what we think it is. You know, there are 20 different ways people say it's unconstitutional, and these say it doesn't mean this, and it doesn't mean that, and it only applies to these people. And a lot of them are completely off the wall, and I looked into a few and found that, well, they were misquoting that, or they didn't understand that. And when I got pointed at another issue that basically sounded the same, the punchline, if you will, was most Americans don't actually owe federal income taxes according to the law itself. And I, unfortunately, being a mere mortal human being, I did the guilt by association thing and thought, well, that sounds like the other things that turned out to not be true, so it'll probably turn out to not be true, which is bad logic, but, you know, I'm only human. But I started looking into it and not only found that, yeah, what this guy is writing, it was an article titled Gross Income. It's about the 861.
Who was it by?
Thurston Bell. He wrote an article called Gross Income. This was 1994, I guess. And so I read that and went and checked the citations. And again, this thing isn't about the philosophical issue. It's just, what does the law actually say, and does it match what we're taught that it says? And not only did what he say add up and it matched what the law book said, but I kept finding more and more citations showing that, yeah, it really does match. It really is true that the federal income tax, to sort of oversimplify, it was always a tax on international trade, which under the Constitution, if you believe in those sorts of things, the federal government has jurisdiction over commerce with foreign nations. So they stuck a tax on that. And to me, what was the most fascinating, and it's why I made the DVD, is, you know, after looking at the current law, which is just ridiculously confusing, I thought, well, where does this come from? They didn't just write this mess yesterday. And so I went back to the older law books and basically traced this giant 80-plus year deception where they kept rewriting things and rewording things and rearranging things to do whatever they could to make it harder and harder to find out that most Americans don't actually have taxable income, income subject to the federal income tax. So I released the video that basically accused...
Well, you know, I remember Erwin Schiff was claiming that back in the 90s as well.
Yeah, he was arguing basically that, that income means corporate profits and some other things that... that I actually think he was legally wrong on a bunch of them. On some of them, he had a point. Like, if you go around murdering people, you don't have to say anything to the cops. But if you earn income, they say you have to tell the IRS about it on your tax return. You know, the Fifth Amendment issue of how can you force me to tell you everything about my finances when if I went on a killing spree, I wouldn't have to tell you anything. So there's issues like that that I think sort of have a point to it. But this was actually a separate issue where the law itself spells out, it wasn't so much that there's something wrong with the law or the law is unconstitutional, but that the law itself very carefully makes it hard to find, but it still contains the fact that this is a tax on, international trade. And, you know, U.S. citizens can have taxable income from foreign countries and non-resident aliens and foreign corporations that get income here are taxed and stuff like that. But it was never a tax on the income of all Americans. And so I had a website and a written report called Taxable Income, which you can still get for free from my website, which is LarkenRose.com, LarkenRose.com. And then I did the Theft by Deception video, which explains it in graphic format, so it's hopefully a little easier to follow. And anyway, to make a long story short, all that fun ended with the federal government really, really, really not liking me. And after I invited them to prosecute me, years later, well, first of all, they raided my house and stole all the copies of Theft by Deception they could find because they really didn't like it. They never even pretended it was illegal. They never got an injunction or anything. They just wanted to come steal them all.
So they literally came in your house and took all the copies of this DVD that I have sitting in front of me.
Yep. Well, at the time it was only VHS. The DVD came out later. I forget the exact timing of, but yeah, it's that thing. They came with the intention of stealing every copy they could find under the guise of a search warrant of we're looking for evidence of a crime. And their search warrant, they tried to keep that secret, and eventually I got the court to unseal it, and it was just ridiculous. The whole thing was, he keeps saying what he thinks. We have to do something about it. Like, okay, that's an interesting view of the Fourth Amendment, but... So yeah, they showed up with the intention of stealing every copy they could find and never giving them back. And I asked that the head agent was Donald Perlman, IRS special agent. And I said, when do I get the videos back? And he said, never. And he said that twice, once in person and once on the phone, even though unless something's actually contraband, when they get it from a search warrant, they give it back. Eventually, it sometimes takes a while. So they just admitted while they were here that they intended to steal all the copies they could find of this perfectly legal video. They admit it's legal. They've never alleged otherwise. And intended to never give them back. Now, eventually, when their search warrant was in question, they suddenly gave them back because I think they were worried that the court might sort of be stuck having to throw it out because the Supreme Court happens to have specifically said you're not allowed to take First Amendment stuff under the guise of a search warrant, which is exactly what they did. So they had their fun little Gestapo raid in 2003, and then a few years later had an amazing mock trial in their kangaroo court, and then flung me in prison for a year. Woohoo! And so that was a fun adventure. My I have a book about that. It's out of print and hard copy, but there will soon be a ebook of it, I hope, called Kicking the Dragon, which just goes through all the complete absurdity of what actually happened up to and through the trial and everything before that. It's just it's so much to cover. It's just a ridiculous story, and even when I read it, I remember things that I'd forgotten because I can't hold that much lunacy in my head at one time, and it was stretched over years. And all the things they said, all the things they did. I mean, I got their whole purpose at trial was to prove that I thought I was required to file and didn't, because they got me on a misdemeanor. And everyone in prison said, "You're here on a misdemeanor? Nobody's here on a misdemeanor. What the heck?" Well, they really didn't like me. It was willful failure to file. In other words, they put me in a cage because they didn't send them pieces of paper. But that what they had to prove at trial was that I believed I was legally required to file. And I got all of their witnesses to admit that I believed I didn't owe the tax. And the jury was still so brilliant that after all of the government witnesses proved I was innocent, the jury decided to say guilty. So that really upped my faith in the American people, as you can guess.
All right, so that brings us kind of forward to the reason that I really wanted to have you on the show. At the Free Your Mind Conference in Philadelphia, where you and I met and where I was also presenting, you gave a presentation basically, to put it succinctly, on the validity of the government itself. And you did this in a dialectic form that myself and several other people found fascinating. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what gave you the idea to do this style of presentation, and you know, just what was the thinking behind that? And then what I want to do is I do want to allow the audience to actually hear your entire presentation from the Philly lecture. It was about 39 minutes. And then we'll come back to you after that as well.
Sure. Yeah, I've given lots of talks about basically anti-political philosophy, on the fact that government and law and authority and a lot of things that everyone take for granted and really model their lives around obedience to a ruling class, even though they don't like calling it that anymore, that it doesn't make any sense. It's utterly irrational. It contradicts everyone's moral code. It contradicts logic all over the place. It's basically a completely nonsensical, self-contradictory cult belief. Trouble is, if 6 billion people have it, it doesn't feel weird. If everyone shares the same completely bogus, unreasonable belief, then it feels comfortable and it feels normal. And so I've given lots of talks about the topic from every angle and, you know, every way I can think of. And basically the talk occurred to me as if you're brought up in a belief system and everybody around you believes it and accepts it, this is whether it's religious or political or scientific or whatever it is. If everyone around you believes something, you never have to really question it. You never have to examine it. You sort of just repeat it because everybody else does. And so I sort of thought of how funny it would be to try to explain what people believe about authority and law and government to somebody who didn't believe it. And on this planet, there aren't very many people. And even the ones who don't believe it, they at least know, you know, they usually came from that belief. They used to be statists. They used to believe in government. And so I thought, wouldn't it be funny if somebody from another planet came down who didn't, they don't have a ruling class, they don't have these hallucinations of authority where they think some of them have the right to forcibly dominate all the others, and all the others have some obligation to obey. And basically, so this alien comes down and asks an earthling to explain to him, well, what is this government thing you keep talking about? Can I see it? Will you show me it? And so the talk was basically, I was basically thinking, how can I make this a little bit new and interesting and hopefully a little funny in places? And so the setting was basically trying to get an alien, or getting an alien to try to have an earthling explain to him what this government thing is. Like, point to it. Let me see it. How does it work? And explain some things. And so it's the talk was mostly just the back and forth between this, you know, normal average earthling trying to explain to alien visitor what this government thing is and how it works, this law and authority and law enforcement, legislation and all that stuff. And of course it crashes and explodes, because when you start from scratch and try to explain it in a way to try to make it make sense, it just doesn't. It can't be done. And luckily for most people, they're never asked to do that. But my little talk was basically, here's what would happen if they were asked to try to rationalize what almost everybody believes about government.
And your presentation from Philly was compared by a few different people to things like Gulliver's Travels, Plato's Republic, as well as Galileo's Dialogue. And so, you know, it's really nice to see somebody actually putting the dialectic to use like this and showing the full argument in, you know, you did it on stage right there in front of everybody. So basically, we're going to cut away to that right now. And so we'll be playing your lecture there for the next 39 minutes, and then we'll come back to you.
All right.
My topic today is mind control, but a different kind of mind control than you might usually think of. To me, the concept of mind control brings up the image of somebody strapped to a chair with electrodes on his head and being tortured and drugged and things like that, which is very real, and I'm sure that is a very effective way to do mind control on one person at a time. But if you want to do mind control on 100 million or 300 million people, it's going to take a while to do it that way. There is another method of mind control that is done right out in the open. It's done right in front of us, and it's not usually viewed as mind control. The way to do popular mind control, do mind control on an entire community or an entire society, is to tell a lie to everybody all at once and keep telling them that lie over and over again until they actually perpetuate the lie themselves. If you were a control freak and you wanted to rule the world and you had to go door to door one person at a time and try to convince one person at a time that he should throw away his self-ownership and his self-determination and blindly obey you, instead, you would not be a very successful tyrant. You might make it to three doors before someone beat the tar out of you and said, go away, we don't want to see you again. But if you can spread a lie to everybody at once, to the point where they don't see the lie, and to the point where they repeat the lie themselves, then you're in business. Then you have a long career as a megalomaniac ahead of you. Now, I know there are a lot of talks about conspiracy up here, and I know a lot of Americans have sort of a gut reaction of, oh, you think it's a government conspiracy, as if that's preposterous. Frankly, I think that's a really weird attitude. My wife and I ran a little medical transcription business. We conspired. We spent a lot of time thinking and planning how to make this business, how to make it run smoothly, how to make it so we could make money off of it. The idea that the people who like power wouldn't, behind closed doors, try to figure out how to do what they do, wouldn't conspire, is idiotic. Everyone conspires. If I was a control freak and didn't care about the self-ownership of everybody else, I would conspire, find ways to trick them and lie to them and deceive them and enslave them to my will. As it happens, I think people own themselves, so I don't play that game. But I want to talk about a type of mind control that starts with a conspiracy, but the conspiracy becomes irrelevant and unnecessary. And again, it works by telling a lie so often and for so long that your victims begin to repeat the lie. They pass it on. The teachers pass on the lie to their students. The parents pass on the lie to their children, not because it's some conspiracy, not because the teachers and parents are thinking, I'm going to enslave these little minds. They just think they're telling the kids what is. This is reality. This is the world. They pass on the lie because they don't see it as a lie. And that is the power of mass mind control. If you're part of the group that's been controlled and been told this lie all your life, it doesn't look like a lie. It doesn't feel like a lie. It doesn't feel like anything. It just feels like describing what is. When there is that type of lie, basically the only ones able to see it are outsiders, people who didn't go through that, or people who escaped it, who can look at the whole group that repeats the lie over and over again and say, wow, that's insane. How could they believe that? But to the people inside the group, it's not insane. It's not irrational. It's not a lie. It's what everybody knows. And the power of what everybody knows is huge. It isn't what everybody knows. It's what everybody believes. And if you can get an entire group to believe something completely insane, the chances of any of them ever doubting it are very slim. Because when you grow up in a community and everybody you know, the people you love, the people you know, the people you do business with, they all repeat the lie as if it's gospel truth, why would you ever doubt it, no matter how insane it is? Now, I want to give two examples to demonstrate what the results of mind control look like. In the first example, you're going to be the outsider. You're stumbling through a jungle in the middle of nowhere, and you come across a tribe. And you meet them, and for convenience of my analogy, they happen to speak English, but oh well. And you say, howdy, and they say, hey, stranger, come on in. And you think, well, they didn't kill me, so that's a good start. And you live with them for a while, and they seem rational, they get along, they have some pretty impressive technologies. I mean, it's not up to what you're used to, but it's a pretty smooth-running society. They get along. You know, they have arguments every once in a while, but they don't seem to be going to war with any other tribes, and they basically get along. They're pretty darn civilized. And you think, wow, I might hang around here for a while. Then one day, one of these tribes folk says, oh, it's time. Come on, come on. We all got to go to the volcano. Okay, you know, you seem pretty rational. So we all go to the volcano, yay, and the whole crowd is cheering, and they're all doing their dance, and hooray. And you go up to the volcano, and you don't really know what's going on until right before you notice that some people are up on the very edge throwing someone in. And you go, ah, what just happened? Like, was it some horrible criminal? No, you see, the tribesfolk explained to you, you see, the god of the volcano, he insists that we sacrifice a virgin to him every full moon. So we do. And he takes care of us, and he makes it so our crops grow, and we don't have diseases and things like that. And so you, you know, trying not to offend this tribesperson, you say, well, okay, I see that you believe that, but there's not really a volcano god. It's just, it's a geological... It's just that there's molten rock under the ground, and there are fissures, and sometimes they get up close to the surface. And no, I know you silly foreigners don't understand this stuff. But, you know, you just have to take our word for it. This is necessary. It's for the good of our tribe. We can't help it. We realize it's unfortunate. We don't like having to throw somebody in every month. But, you know, we have to. It's the only way we can survive. And you're trying to politely tell the person, No, it's evil. It's immoral. You're murdering people every month. And you don't need to. It's not necessary. It's not good. It doesn't help. Well, you know, we tried. 1 month, we didn't throw anybody in. And, you know, 2 weeks later, there was an earthquake. And a bunch of our buildings fell over, and there was death and destruction. A big crack opened up, and 100 of us fell in and died. So it's necessary, okay? Just take our word for it. And you say, look, okay, I believe you that there was an earthquake after you didn't do that, but I don't believe there's a connection. That's completely unrelated. That there's not a god of the volcano. The volcano isn't controlling the weather. It's not controlling the earthquakes. It's not controlling your crops. You shouldn't be doing that. It's bad. And eventually the guy in the tribe says, what do you know? You know, you're a stupid outsider. You don't know anything about us. You don't know anything about what we believe. And if you don't like it, if you don't like our culture, just get out. Get out of our jungle. Get lost. And you try to talk to them. How can you not see that what you're doing is insane and horrible and evil? You're killing people. I mean, if you just danced around and prayed to the volcano, okay, that would be one thing. But you're killing people. You're murdering human beings based on this lie. And the tribes folks say, oh, shut up, get lost. So you do, and figure, I can't change their minds, I'm leaving. Now, you might wonder at some point, where did that lie start? Where did they get the notion that to survive, you got to fling someone into a volcano every month? Maybe somebody just sort of came up with a theory hundreds of years earlier and said, you know, I think maybe that big rumbling is a god and he's angry. Or maybe some guy in the tribe, some clever guy, thought, you know, if I can make them think that I can talk to the gods, I bet I can get a lot of power and influence out of that. If I can make them start doing these rituals as if there's a god in the volcano and as if I'm his spokesman, that's going to pay off for me. And maybe he did that, maybe he passed it on to his son, and maybe that went year after year. Or maybe it was just somebody made it up. But eventually, it doesn't matter. Because eventually, the ones pushing the lie, the ones who teach the lie, are everybody. And they don't even know why. They don't understand that it's a lie, so they pass it on. And they are incapable of considering the possibility that it's a lie. Now, from our perspective, it's easy to look at the tribe and go, oh, how backwards and primitive and silly and irrational you are, believing this ridiculous myth about God of the volcano. We can ridicule them, we can insult them, and so on and so forth. But now, I'd like you to consider the second example. What lies do we not see because we all believe them? Because we all repeat them? Because we've all heard everybody we know repeating them over and over and over again? No, we don't believe in a volcano god, but what do we believe in that doesn't actually make any sense, but that we've never questioned? In other words, what are the ways in which mind control has been used on us and we haven't noticed? For that example, we don't get to be the outsiders because we're in the group. So this example, an alien comes down to Earth and he lands here and he's looking around and he comes across an Earthling. And the Earthling goes, ooh, ooh, you don't look like one of us. You're from another planet, right? The alien says, yep, just thought I'd come down and see how you guys are doing, see what your civilization's up to. And the Earthling says, should I take you to our leader? And the alien says, to your what? You know, the guy in charge. The guy in charge of what? The guy in charge of everything. You have one guy in charge of everything? Well, it's not just one, it's a few. You know, government. Government. Well, you know, I came down to see your civilization, and sure, show me this government thing. So you jump in a car and you drive to Washington, D.C. And they get out, and the Earthling goes, here it is. And the alien says, okay, where? I'm not sure what I'm looking for. Well, it's all around us. This is where it all happens. Okay, where's this government thing? Well, it's It's all around us. This is where it happens. Well, I see this huge building here. Is that it? Well, that's the Capitol building. That's where government does its business. In there. Okay, but that's not government. That's just sort of its house or something. Yeah, that's right. That's where it does its thing. Well, could you tell me what this government thing, what does it look like? Like, describe it to me. Well, it doesn't really look like anything. I mean, you can't really see government as a thing. So it's like a gas or something that floats around that's invisible or it hides or something. No, it's not anything like that. It's hard to explain. You can't really see it. You can't really draw a picture of it. All right, well then let's try this approach. What does it do, this government thing? What does it do? Well, it makes the rules for all of us. It tells us what to do. And for those who disobey, it punishes us. Okay, so this thing tells you, human earthlings, what to do. It bosses you around, and if you disobey, it punishes you. Sounds sort of like a slave master. Oh, no. It works for us. It serves us. We're the boss. It tells you what to do and hurts you if you disobey, and you're its boss. Yeah, exactly. Okay, I'm having a little trouble with it. It gives you these rules. It's wise and gives you smart rules all the time, you mean? No, a lot of its rules are really stupid. And it makes us pay for things that they're destructive, they're idiotic, they're evil. So this thing that serves you by making you do dumb stuff and making you pay for stuff you don't like. Yeah, well, we have to have it. It's necessary for society. So is it just big and powerful and it can really squish you if you disobey and you're all just scared of this thing? Well, we're sort of scared, but we feel an obligation to obey the law. You know, we're a law-abiding people. We go by the rules. But you just said the rules are sometimes stupid. Yeah, and sometimes we go by the stupid rules, but we have to obey. I mean, it's the law. We're obligated to obey. We can ask government to change the laws, but as long as it's the law, we have to obey. So you're obligated to do stuff that you think is stupid and destructive. Yeah, but we can ask it to please tell us to do smart things. Okay. Oh, there's a senator. Yeah, he's a part of government. See the guy? He's getting in the limo. That's a senator. The gray-haired thing, getting in the limo right there. Yeah, he's part of government. That's it. That's him. So this government thing, it disguises itself like earthlings to make it easier to deal with you? No, he's just a person. He's a human. He's the same as you, but he's government, and you're not. Is that it? Yeah, well, he's part of government, and we just vote for them. Okay, so he's allowed to boss you around and even tell you to do dumb things, and you're obligated to obey him, even when you think the orders are stupid. Yeah, we can ask him to change his orders, but yeah, we have to obey. You're not allowed to boss him around and take his money, tell him what to do. Oh, no. They'd put us in cages if we did that. Okay, I'm having trouble with this because I look at you and I look at him. You're the same thing. You're the same species. You're one of the species and he's another one of the species, but he's government and you're not. And he's allowed to boss you around and you're not allowed to boss him around. I don't get, if you're the same thing, why you're not the same thing. Why are the rules different if you're both the same species? Well, maybe I should explain. He's not, all by himself, he's not government. Like, if he came over right now and said, give me $50 or I'll punch you, he's not allowed to do that. He doesn't have the right to do that. If he came over right now just on his own and told me what to do, he can't do that. He's only allowed to do these things when he's acting as government. So he's not government, he's acting as government. So he's pretending to be government? No, I mean acting on behalf of government. Okay, so he's not it anymore. He's not government. There's this other thing called government, and he's acting on behalf of it when he bosses you around and demands your money. Right? Well, yeah, he's a part of it, and he represents it. He's just their agent, sort of. Okay, so you can't really point to him. He's not government anymore. The building, that's not government. The guy, he's not government. He's just acting on behalf of it. And they give you these orders. Yeah, they're called laws, and there's whole libraries full of law books that tell us what we can do and what happens if we disobey. Okay, and they're not government either. They're just books. Yeah, they're just books. So you have the building that isn't government, the people that aren't government, the people who enforce it. Is that some different species? No, they're just humans too. Okay. You have enforcers, you have law books. None of them are government, but they all act on behalf of government, whatever it is. Yeah, well, sort of together they are, but sort of together they're not, really. Okay, these laws. Who makes them up? Government makes them up, and then, like, that guy writes it down? The guy who got in the limo? No, he makes it up. He makes up the rules. Him and a bunch of other politicians, they make up the rules, and then they have enforcers they hire to come put us in cages if we disobey. So he's making it up. He's the one thinking them up and writing them down. That human, the thing that's just like you, the human, along with other humans, they're the ones that sit down and make up these commands. Yeah, they make the laws. While claiming to be acting on behalf of a thing called government. Does that thing look like a volcano by any chance? No, why do you ask? Never mind. So humans make up these commands. They tell you to obey. You feel obligated to obey, even when you think they're stupid. I'm still having trouble recognizing the government because I can see all the ingredients you can point out. I can see the law books and the buildings and the enforcers and the politicians, but you keep saying it's something else, and you keep not being able to point to it. I mean, I understand, you know, even back on my planet, we have, like, sports teams, and you can say that all these people are on the sports team, and together they make up a sports team. But what you're telling me is all these people in buildings, they're part of government, but they're not really it. There's something else that makes it government, and they're not it, but you can't really tell me what it is or where it comes from. So let's try a new approach. They give you these laws, these commands. They tell you what to do. Basically, they threaten you, right? They say you're going to do this or we'll hurt you. Well, yeah, but we don't really view it that way. You know, it's the law of the land. You know, we have to obey it. It's the law of the land. The dirt? The land makes the law? I thought that guy did. Well, yeah, but on behalf of the thing called government, on behalf of the country, he tells us what to do and hurts us if we disobey. Wait, didn't you say he works for you? He does this for your benefit? Yeah, for our benefit, he bosses us around and takes our money. Okay. So you feel an obligation to obey these commands, even if you think they're stupid. Like, can you give me an example of one of the commands that you think are stupid? You don't like, but you think you should go along with it anyway. Well, they make us pay taxes. They demand lots of money from us, and they pay for wars. They pay to pay lots of people to go to the other side of the planet and kill a bunch of people. And I don't like paying for that. Okay, I can see how you wouldn't like that. Doesn't sound like a good thing to me, the way you described it. But you feel obligated to give them your money. Like, it's a bad thing if you don't. Yeah. You feel obligated to fund what you consider to be murder. You think it's bad for you not to fund murder. In a way. Okay, let me back up for a minute. Do you earthlings, do you generally accept that stealing from each other and beating each other up and murdering each other for no reason? Are you guys to the point where you kind of understand that that's not a good thing? Oh, yeah, 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 we know that. You know, you don't steal, don't attack, don't assault. Don't do that horrible thing. Okay. But when the guy who got in the limo, when he says, give us money so we can go kill people, you feel obligated to go along with it and to give him money. Well, that's different. That's not just somebody doing it. That's authority doing it. That's government doing it. Okay, now, I'm assuming you're just scared of this thing, this big, horrible, powerful thing. So, like, how many people does it take money from to pay for this war, among other things? About 100 million of us. 100 million of you. So it must have, you know, 100 million enforcers to make you guys pay up? No, I think there are about 100,000 tax collectors for the federal government. So you outnumber them 1,000 to 1, but you still feel obligated to give them your money to fund things you think are evil. Well, yeah, we can ask them to change their commands, of course. We're allowed to ask them to tell us to do what we want them to tell us to do. Okay, so let me get this straight. You sent them there. You decided that some of you should go there and boss you around and take your money. And your goal is to pick somebody who's going to order you to do what you were going to do anyway. But what happens every time is he orders you to do something else, and then you try to make somebody else go there who's going to boss you around and command you to do things that are in line with your own beliefs and morals and things like that. Is that how it works? Yeah, yeah, pretty much. They boss us around, and we try to put people there who are going to tell us to do what we wanted to do in the first place. Okay, now, I realize I'm new to this planet, and this seems sort of strange to me, but I got to ask you a question. Instead of you trying to pick one of you to put there to boss you around and take your money in the hopes that he's going to do it and command you to do the things that you think are right anyway, why don't you do what we do on our planet, which is you do what you think is right, and that's all. On my planet, you know, we have conflicts and stuff, but we each do what we think is right. We spend our own money, we make up our own decisions. Why would you try to take a person, put him in a position where he can force you to do something and try to get someone who's going to force you to do what you were going to do anyway? I don't get why you do that. Well, no, we can't. You can't have everyone deciding for himself what he's going to do. That's anarchy. There'd be chaos and mayhem, and you didn't have laws if you didn't have government. It's just, and it would never work. It would never work. So, in order to keep you humans civilized, in order to keep you from attacking and stealing and murdering each other, you choose some of you to go over there who then attack you and steal from you and murder you so that nobody will attack you and steal from you and murder you, because if they didn't, somebody might attack you and steal from you and murder you. Is that right? Yeah, yeah, that about sums it up. See, we humans, if left to our own devices, we're untrustworthy. You know, some of us are just negligent. Some of us are nasty. You know, some of us would hurt each other. But you said you understand you shouldn't steal and murder and stuff like that. Well, yeah, most of us understand that. And most of us get along pretty well. But there are a few of us who they will steal and beat people up and even murder people. Right, I can see how that would be a problem. And so That's why we need government, because some people do that. So you need this thing that steals from you and bosses you around and occasionally murders people. You need that because sometimes a few people, not very many, might decide to steal from you and boss you around and murder people. So you need an organization that does that first so somebody else doesn't do it. Again, I'm new to this planet. I'm sorry I'm having a hard time understanding this. It's just, it's tough. Well, you know, we're untrustworthy. We're imperfect. You know, like I said, mostly we get along, but there are those little problems, and we need somebody in charge. We need government in charge to keep us civilized. Okay, so you put, I assume you put the wisest, most noble, most compassionate people into power so that they will use their wisdom to keep the rest of you in line. Still doesn't really make sense, but at least you have the best among you going there, right? No. Actually, they're all a bunch of lying crooks. The ones you sent there. Well, we don't try to elect lying crooks, but it always turns out that way. And that they always get caught doing nasty, horrible things, and they're constantly doing things we don't like with our money, whether it's, you know, giving money to people who are already zillionaires, or waging war, or taking money from people who earn it to give it to people who didn't, or other things like that. Yeah, they are constantly doing that stuff. They're completely corrupt. They're a bunch of lying crooks. Okay, so let me see one last time if I can understand this. Because human beings are untrustworthy, some of them, because they're sometimes negligent or nasty, because there's the threat that some of your neighbors might boss you around or steal from you or even kill you, because of that, it is necessary for your survival to take some of the worst people among you and give them permission to steal from you, boss you around, and kill people. Does that about sum it up? Yeah, that's pretty much government in a nutshell. Okay, tell you what, we'll come back to your planet in a few hundred years and see if you have any grasp on reality by then. See you later. Alien flies away. This is the mind control that most people don't see. If you believe there is such a thing as government, you are the victim of mind control. Government is no more real than the volcano god. The guy in the limo, when he and his fellow lying crooks issue a command to you and all your neighbors, if you imagine that to be law and imagine disobedience to his commands to be crime, you are the victim of mind control. If you actually believe that you can ever have a moral obligation to do the wrong thing, to fund something you think is evil, you are the victim of mind control. Now, the good news, if it can be called that, is so is everybody else around you. Because everyone else believes it. Everyone else takes pride in being a law-abiding taxpayer, which means I obey the lying crooks and I give them my money. Okay, not really a good reason to be proud, but oh well. The trouble is, I think a bunch of people in this room, they can see it. They understand that mind control and they can see through it and are now outsiders from that game. Most of the country isn't. Most of the country, if you tell them there isn't a volcano god, I mean, there isn't a government, will say, you're ridiculous, get out of here, we need it. Yeah, but it does nasty things, it kills people, it steals from you. Hey, if we didn't have that, there would be chaos and death and destruction. We need it. We can look at the silly tribe that believes in the volcano god. How can you be so dumb as to throw a person into a volcano every month? But you know, a lot more than one person a month gets murdered by the people who pretend to be our rightful rulers. If we were the tribe that worshiped the volcano god, we'd be miles ahead of where we are now. We can laugh at them. We can pretend that we're too wise for that. and then we can go vote for the next crook who's going to steal our money and clobber us over the head and tell us what to do and murder people. The fact that we all believe it, that we all repeat it, that we heard it in school, that we hear it from our parents, from our teachers, from people who care about us, it doesn't mean it's true. And the truth of the matter is, it's not that tough to demonstrate that the belief in government and calling the politicians' commands laws and calling their demands for money taxes, it doesn't make any sense. It makes less sense than believing in a volcano god, because at least a volcano god, in order to prove there isn't one, you'd have to like dig up the volcano and go, see, no god, just a bunch of molten rock. But it's very easy to go through lines of reasoning just on what people know already to demonstrate that the people who call themselves government cannot possibly have the right to rule. Just like the alien was baffled, they cannot possibly have any right that you don't personally have. If you don't have the right to tax, they don't have the right to tax, because where would they have gotten it? If we all started as humans, all men are created equal, and suddenly Congress shall have the power to tax. What the heck happened in between? How did we get unequal again? Some are more equal than others. It's very simple to prove that everyone in this country at one point or another was a victim of mind control, but it's very difficult for them to see it because the lie is everywhere and they don't want to see that their entire life and their entire belief system is based on a lie. And the worst part is that this lie takes the virtues of good people. It takes their good qualities, their productivity, and their honor, and turns it into fuel for some of the most evil people in the world. If it was merely dancing around a volcano, who cares? But the belief in government kills. It robs, it extorts, it assaults, it violates every right you could possibly imagine, including the right to be alive. This is why I refer to the belief in government as the most dangerous superstition. It's not just a rational construct. It's not just a way to organize and get along. It's not a way to cooperate. It's a hallucination of something that is not there, a group of the right to rule. Let me end on this. Government is the volcano god. And you can imagine if you just wandered through a jungle and found this tribe, how frustrating it would be to watch them throwing somebody into a volcano, somebody perfectly innocent, trying to explain to them their entire view of what that volcano is completely backwards. It's completely bogus. It's rock and lava. It's not a god. You don't have to do this. This isn't doing you any good. And it's easy to picture how frustrating that would be. And my question is, are we Americans any more open to reason than the volcano worshippers? Most of us aren't. And you can see that when you try to deprogram someone from their own lie, their own universally accepted lie. They don't believe in the volcano god, they just believe in something that's about 100,000 times more destructive. We can think we're smarter than that tribe as we murder tens of thousands of people at a time that haven't done anything to us. We can think we're smarter than that tribe as we imagine legitimacy to a group of people stealing trillions of dollars and doing destructive, evil, idiotic things with it. We are not sane beings until we accept that we each own ourselves. We do not behave in a sane manner as long as we believe in authority. Because when you believe in authority, you actually really and truly believe that you have an obligation to do what you think is wrong. Because whenever there's a conflict between your own judgment and authority, if you choose authority, you are choosing evil. And humanity has been doing it for a long, long time. It's why every war has happened. Every example of widespread oppression. It's because we imagine a thing that is no more real than a volcano god. Thank you.
Larkin, that was an amazingly short, 39 minutes, and here we are back. But here you are. You've given this lecture. The aliens' logic wins. You know, as Spock won out, the humans' logic failed again. And so, you know, basically, where do we go from here? What's the course of action?
Really, my goal is to sort of put people in the position of that earthling of look at what you actually believe. Don't just, you know, you hear it in civics class. You're taught to repeat things. They don't make any sense. They contradict themselves. But you're taught these things and you say them and everybody else says them and you pretend it makes sense and you pretend you understand them. Basically, I want people to look at their beliefs in government until they actually understand it. Because when they do, the beliefs won't be there anymore. Because you cannot believe in government without having a self-contradictory belief system. And I know that's going to sound weird to people. It would have sounded weird to me for the years and years and years and years that I believed in government and law and authority.
Well, I think you just did in your presentation that we just played, I think you did, a clean enough job that people should really get that concept by now. It shouldn't sound too weird right now.
Yeah, you'd hope, but just, you know, right out of the box to think, well, no, some government, you'd have to have something, and because people are so stuck inside that paradigm that to suggest that they be all the way outside that paradigm is too troubling. But basically, that's where they end up if they just look at their own belief system and try to make it consistent with itself. And that's why I got here, because I saw little flaws. I was, you know, conservative or constitutionalist, libertarian leaning. And so I'd have debates, because I always like debating with people, and I would notice contradictions inside my own beliefs. And after the fun debate, I'd go somewhere and think, all right, I have this contradiction. Let me look at it carefully because something's got to go. I have two beliefs. They don't match each other. Something's got to go. Well, if you keep doing that, eventually the entire mythology of government disappears. It's just gone. And it's not. I didn't come to being a anarchist, is sort of the scary word for it. Voluntarist is the nicer sounding word for it. I didn't get to that point by deciding that human beings would do things better without a ruling class. I got there by realizing ruling classes can't be legitimate, no matter what. They can't have authority. Their commands can't be law. And without authority, they can't be government. It's a gang of thugs. I didn't come to the... Basically, for me, it didn't end up as a choice between, which of these will work better? And the analogy I often use is, today, I don't look at Christmas and say, well, let's see, should we do it with Santa Claus or without? There's not a choice. We don't have him. And that is the reality about government. It's not a choice of do we have it or don't we? We don't. It doesn't exist. It can't exist. The entire belief and all of the mythology surrounding it doesn't make any sense. And it conflicts with the moral code and the logic of everybody. And I don't care if you're talking Christians, Muslims, atheists, anything.
Well, you know, let's not forget, Larkin, and I've looked a lot into this over the last several months, but the word governmente, originally in Mid and Old English, means mind control. And some people will argue that the ment on the end is simply a suffix like employment or something like that. But the word govern or gubernare is to steer or control. So what other than the human mind is government meant to steer or control? So really, to claim that the ment or mente is simply a suffix and not ment for, or mente for Latin for mind, is really a slap in the face, because no matter how you break it down, the word government in and of itself means mind control.
Means mind control, and it's perfectly labeled.
Right, and if you look in the Oxford English Dictionary and you look at the descriptions of it, it says, you know, control the behavior and, you know, the religion and the actions of others and all of these different aspects. It is at face, you know, slap in the face value, for that matter, mind control.
Yeah.
And, you know, but so many people will argue, try and argue that suffix point of government rather than, you know, governmente, but I always beg people to please provide me a single example where government is not used for mind control in the political sense, and they can't do it.
Right, right. And that's the thing. My first and most recent book, which sounds weird, but basically it's the first book I started 15 years ago, and it just came out, called The Most Dangerous Superstition. It's about the belief in authority, which mostly today shows up as the belief in government. Churches used to claim the right to rule people, but now mostly it's government.
You know, I'm going to interrupt you really quickly because, you know, the appeal to authority is a logical fallacy in and of itself, which, you know, and that's why I wanted to have you on the show, because of the trivium, and the trivium specifically in this order is grammar, logic, and rhetoric. And as you were doing earlier, you were removing the contradictions that you found in your own thought processes when you're debating other people. So you remove those contradictions, which is the logic aspect. And here you're presenting this dialectic, and logic is also known as the dialectic. And of course, you're using rhetoric to express what you've learned in that dialectic to others. You know, so that's really the key of why I wanted you on the show. So here you're doing all of this work that's really founded in the trivium in and of itself, and the biggest one, like you were just saying, this appeal to authority fallacy of the government.
Right, and the fact that even all those people, because everybody today points at, you know, the current United States government and says, oh, look at the horrible things it's doing. You know, people complain about different horrible things it's doing, depending on whether they're politically left or right or moderate or whatever they call themselves. But what they don't get, and the only way to get it, is what you're talking about by logic and grammar and rhetoric, is that the power of that thing that they're pointing at, to whether it's to save them or to complain about it, it's all illusion. It's all hallucination. It's all mind control. Every bit of the power of government is mind control by making people hallucinate legitimacy and authority, which doesn't make sense, and it contradicts itself. So yeah, what I do using logic and grammar, and grammar is a huge one, because the grammar and rhetoric, they sort of tie together. But
and you always have to remember, too, just to point this out for the audience, that it does always need to be in a specific order, because grammar is like the building blocks of like an engine or a car or a house or whatever. Logic is that house put together, all the contradictions removed, and then rhetoric would be like the architect's manual or the owner's manual of how it all went together and explaining how it all works.
Right. And if you basically, if you look at the mythology about government through each of those steps, it falls apart and explodes all over the place. If you start with literally stating reality, not the things we're taught to echo, consent of the governed and representative and law and yada, yada, yada. If you just step through it for, you know, expressing concepts, language, making sure the concepts actually match and fit logic, and then the sort of the final message, it doesn't. If you just take people back through the belief system they already have and try to get them to express it literally accurately without the euphemisms and the propaganda and all these weird sayings we're taught to memorize and repeat as if they make sense. If you just try to get them, you know, like we just heard in the back and forth with the alien, if you just try to get them to explain their own beliefs in a rational way, they explode all over the place. And that's really all I want to do. You know, a lot of people, the debate is, you believe A and I believe B, and I want to bludgeon you over the head until you believe B. And that's not what I'm doing. Luckily, that's not what I have to do, because that never works. I'm telling people, you believe A and you believe B, and A and B are mutually logically exclusive. So please look at your own beliefs and pick one, because you can't have both. And anybody who still believes
remove
in authority has both. Exactly. If you remove the contradictions, the mythology of authority and government evaporates, and then it's gone. And then you go, oh yeah, the world completely isn't what I always imagined it to be. In fact, I'm not what I imagined myself to be. Because suddenly, I don't have an owner. I don't have a master. It's just me. And that's, on the one hand, it's very freeing. And on the other hand, it's a little bit scary because suddenly you have to be a responsible, like, sentient being instead of just a sheep in a pasture. But it's worth it, folks, to be actually rational and have a consistent belief system.
Larkin, what is the single most important concept that you would like people to take away from this interview and lecture?
I guess if I had to sum it up, it would be there's no such thing as authority, and when you hallucinate it, when you hallucinate an authority, especially in the form of government and laws, and when you hallucinate an obligation to obey someone else's judgment, when you hallucinate a right of somebody else to control you, you betray yourself. You betray your own moral code. You betray your own responsibility, your own ethics, your own morals, your own logic. You betray everything about you. Basically, you reduce yourself to a slave of somebody else. And as much as you were taught that that's necessary, it's not necessary. It's not good. It doesn't help humanity or civilization. I guess that would about be it.
All right, and would you like to give out your website and the title of your titles of your books and DVD, etc.?
Yeah, my website is larkenrose.com. That's LarkenRose.com. And there's a bunch of free articles there. My new radio show, Outside the Cage, there's a link for that at the top of the front page. And you can hear the past shows. They were actually designed to target people who haven't thought about these things before. And a few people, after listening to them, say, hey, this is something I actually dare to play to my normal friends and acquaintances to make them start thinking about these things. And then on LarkenRose.com, you can also get three of my books. The first one is How to Be a Successful Tyrant. The second one is my novel, The Iron Web. Which I won't give away too much of the plot, but it's basically about the end of the United States.
Yeah, and I've heard a good chunk of that. It's very good, and your cousin shared quite a bit of that with me.
Cool. And then the most recent one, the most important thing I've ever written, is The Most Dangerous Superstition, which really tears to the heart of the irrational, self-contradictory basis of the belief system of almost everyone, not just in the country, but in the world. And so all three of them are on the website. And there are some short little flippant videos that I have on youtube.com/LarkenRose. Just short little 5 or 10 minute videos that get fun arguments and conversations going. Sort of like the interview with the alien and the earthling. So that's enough to keep people busy for an hour or two or three or 40.
All right, yeah. It's kind of like going to my website. Here, just check out this. So
get back to
all
me
right,
next
Larkin.
Year.
Yeah, get back to me next year, exactly. All right, Larkin, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.